It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast. My name is Steven, and I am the host, as always. Joining me is my guy, Tyler. It's been a minute. We had some interviews. We had some school things. And so, you know, it's been basically a week since the two of us have been live streaming together. So happy to be back at it with my guy. And what's up, man? How are you doing tonight?
Doing very well. Yes, school things came up and first teacher things came up. And then you had some great interviews and the timing was great for them, not so great for me, but all good. The content was awesome. I think between the two, like an hour and 15 minutes of just great stuff with two great guys who know a ton. So good job hosting that. Good job with the interviews. Always good as always to hear from Brett. Awesome to hear from Sheil Kapadia. Great stuff. But I'm back, so you're all stuck with me now. I'm ready.
Yeah, happy to be back with our normal stuff. You know, we try and do interviews as much as we can together. Unfortunately, like, coordinating schedules with people, it gets a little tough sometimes. So, you know, Sheil Kapadia is on the East Coast, so it was you know, tough to coordinate that one. But hopefully you guys enjoyed them. I sure had a great time, you know, doing the two interviews, and I think painted a different kind of perspective about both interviews. I think, you know, Sheil, not necessarily a draft expert, so I wanted to kind of pick his brain about more like general stuff. And then with Brett, it was like, well, he's studied all of these guys, you know, left and right. And so, you know, let's dive into the scheme fit, nitty gritty stuff here. And so different, good interviews for different reasons. And I'm glad that both of them were able to join me and were able to get something recorded. And it seems like for the most part, the feedback from both of those interviews has been pretty positive. So I do appreciate that. And obviously appreciate their time jumping on with me as well.
Yeah, Sheil going out and saying the Chargers could be some playoff contenders. That was certainly interesting. I get it, especially with the current schedule in front of them. But that'd be nice. I would love for the Chargers to be contenders in year one.
Yeah, I listen to Sheil and Ben Solak every single week. I love the Extra Point Taken part of the Ringer NFL show. And I was definitely not expecting that take from Sheil. Granted, it is May and he does reserve the right to change it, but you know the points that he made about the Chargers were spot on, because the schedule is pretty easy this year for the, you know, relatively speaking. You know, you go from Brandon Staley to Jim Harbaugh, presumably Justin Herbert stays healthy for the first time in 3 years, so you know, we'll see what happens. And if those things can come to fruition, who knows? You know, they do play the NFC South this year, which is pretty nice, as opposed to the AFC North. Or wait, they do play the AFC North too. Never
mind. It's give and take.
Give and take. Yeah. Speaking of that, schedule will officially be out next week. So our schedule is going to be a little bit different next week, because we want to be able to react to the release of the schedule on Wednesday when it does officially happen. I cannot wait to see what the Chargers do. Do we get anime part 3? Do they just completely mix it up and go with a different idea? You know, it's gonna be really interesting to see what they pull off next week, and then we'll be live on Wednesday to break it all down in terms of the video, and then also look at kind of some early record predictions, as we always do. So I'm hoping for one specific lineup. The Chargers play at Arizona. Utah has a game at Arizona as well. I'm hopeful that is the one weekend that lines up since college football decided to nuke the Pac-12. It's the only potential chance I get at a, like a crossover. So yeah, rooting for that to be the same time. Other than that, I'm cool with it. Primetime games, Tyler, how many are you thinking, and who do you think gets it?
At least three. So Ravens will be a guarantee. There's no shot that isn't.
Yeah.
I feel like it's at least one of the Raiders or Broncos, sometimes both. So let's just say one of those. Chiefs, like Herbert Mahomes in primetime is a must. Even if it's Rivers Mahomes or Rivers, like the Chargers and Chiefs are great in primetime. So there's three. And then they've played the Steelers in primetime at least the last four times in a row, going back to the, I believe, Michael Vick-led Steelers in Qualcomm a few years ago. Yeah, where Jason Verrett covered Antonio Brown. What a world. So I think they could do that again. So I think at least three, could definitely see four. I don't see any surprise NFC teams being on there. I don't think there's enough of a, like, hey, that's a really good matchup. Or, ooh, two young quarterbacks. Like, I just think they'll stick with the AFC, and it'll be the big names, two division games, Ravens, and then let's say Steelers as well.
Yeah, I think two of the AFC North games, that's fair. And then two AFC West games, I think that's also fair. Like the Saints and the Bucks, I just don't think they're super interesting. Falcons, maybe sneaky one with, you know, Kirk Cousins and everything like that. But yeah, I think, you know, we're looking at two AFC North games on primetime, two AFC West on primetime. And I'm going to say four. And I think they'll always have the chance to flex one to five. But I think they do four. The Chargers, even though there's a lot of Jim Harbaugh hype, they were bad last year. And so, you know, usually that the NFL doesn't reward the bad teams despite the coaching change. I still think three or four is probably where we end up getting.
Yes. And also, you know, people, it seems very 50-50 now on the anime schedule release. I think if they had done well last year and won a lot of games, you see the trilogy capped off this year. I think the Chargers are going to do something completely different. I think it'll be exciting, but a bit more grunge rock than like a pop rock exciting sort of thing. Like, I think it's going to be like, nope, different team. We're serious. The anime stuff, super fun, great jokes, but we got to take it more seriously. I think they'll do that this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, trilogy makes sense, end on a high note, and then do the new thing next year. So, All right. Today we are going to dive into the undrafted free agents on this roster. We're not going to do scouting reports for all of them. We have not watched all of them, but we've watched the ones that we feel like have a good chance of making it. So we're going to talk about those ones mostly today. And then we are briefly going to mention like the DJ Chark signing, which we haven't talked about much, and the Bud Dupree visit. So everything's going to tie together here today. This show, as always, is brought to you by our friends over at Prize Picks, the best and easiest way to consume daily fantasy sports. It is super fun and easy to use during the NBA playoffs. I've been able to, you know, put out lineups every single night, basically. And it's been a lot of fun, been pretty successful so far with the NBA playoffs. I feel like I haven't been paying attention as much. And so using Prize Picks is a great way to get some skin in the game. So you get a deposit match up to $100 by using prizepicks.com/guilty, code guilty at checkout. Again, that is prizepicks.com/guilty at and code guilty at checkout. So Tyler, let's dive into these undrafted free agent profiles, and then we'll take some questions at the end if we have some time.
Sounds good. So yes, Chargers 2024 undrafted free agent profiles. I will do individual ones for all these guys. We cannot spend time here today doing 20 different profiles. We'd be here for another 3-4 hours, and we're not going to do that. It's also just have not watched every single one of them. Sorry, quarterback from Augustana. I've not watched you, the guy from Campbell, Western Carolina. Sorry, didn't get the film there. Respect Alex Katzen or Gavino or anyone who actually watches that, but have not gotten there. And we wanted to start with, like, okay, let's set the stage for what the roster is like, because we can talk about our favorite undrafted free agents. But we're specifically trying to focus on, our favorites, but also are the best odds to make the roster. So we got to start with the additions the Chargers have had this past offseason, both in free agency and in the draft, some after the draft as well. So notable, you know, DJ Chark, potentially Marquez Valdez-Scantling is on the way. We don't know. They just added Bud Dupree, the edge rusher. We know they've added Hayden Hurst, Will Disley, Puna Ford.
Well, Bud Dupree not officially signed.
He right, visited. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, visited? I thought he signed. Never mind. Potentially on the way, but we'll see. Sorry. And then, of course, the draft. They drafted three wide receivers, which affects the other three receivers on the undrafted free agent list quite a bit. Added Joe Walt, which kind of just changes the chemistry of the offensive line. Junior Colson, Justin Aboigbe, and then the two corners they added, Tar Heapstill and Cam Hart. So those are the additions there. As far as the roster spots, like what seems the most available, do these four seem right? Tight end, offensive line in some capacity, safety and corner?
Yeah, I would say so. I think like wide receiver is so tricky. They have 11 guys on the roster and they're still reportedly interested in Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Like that's going to be basically impossible for a wide receiver to like carve out a role. I think wide receiver is essentially set with, you know, the three from last year, or I guess, yeah, the three from last year. I'm not counting Simi Fuego. I think he's pretty much gone. And then the three that they drafted and DJ Chark, that makes seven. Like that's tough, you know? And then if they add Marquez Valdes-Scantling as well, it's just going to be really difficult for a wide receiver to make it. Offensive line, I do agree with like the eight locks. You have your starting five, obviously Rashawn, Zion, Bozeman, and then whoever starts at right guard, be it Pipkins or Jamari Sawyer, Joe Alt, and then McFadden, I do consider a lock, and then Hymus, I do consider a lock. Until they sign a veteran interior offensive lineman, I think those two do have to be considered locks. So that's eight. I think this is a team that will carry nine offensive linemen. It just kind of depends where that spot comes from, whether it's, like I mentioned, the veteran offensive lineman or maybe one of these undrafted free agent offensive linemen kind of just, you know, blow them out of the water and have a great camp and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Nine could be 10. As I mentioned, I think 2 years ago, the Ravens carried 11 on their roster. So it is very possible they do carry 11 offensive linemen. It is Harbaugh. But yeah, they'll definitely have nine. Nine has been typical for the Chargers. It seems to be generally typical nine or 10. So it kind of just depends on what they're looking for there. And yeah, people were very like, oh, why is Hymus a lock? There's no other center, guys. Like, yeah. Unless somebody new decides to play center, maybe they think there's some shuffling there. It's Bozeman, and then it's just Hymus. If they add someone, cool, not a lock. But then that kind of just, that still makes the eight locks, I think. Then Hymus is not a lock. So I think eight, and yeah. We'll see from there.
I think minicamp stuff, I don't know how much you want to take away from minicamp, and it's not even like really minicamp. Like these are just off-season workouts. That being said, in every single picture of the second team offensive line, Brendan Hymus is playing center and Jordan McFadden is playing guard. So I feel like if they actually thought McFadden was going to be center, they'd be testing that out right now, like getting him some snaps, like getting him in the feel. Like it's even to the point where they'd rather have Nick Hardwick snap instead of Jordan McFadden right now. And again, that can change. Maybe he's just getting up to speed with the playbook and everything like that. But I feel like if he were a legitimate challenger to Hymus right now, he would be taking snaps. So just wanted to throw that out there. Also regarding the offensive line, Alex Katzen pointed this out today, and I think it was a great point. Technically speaking, the Chargers roster does currently stand at 88 players. That does take Corey Linsley's role, I guess, into account. So once he officially retires, it would be 87. And CJ Okoye's roster spot does not technically count against the 90-man roster. So theoretically, the Chargers do have four spots on the roster to work with to be able to potentially add a free agent like a Bud Dupree, like another defensive lineman, a safety, whatever the case may be that they're looking for. So yeah, just wanted to throw that part out.
Yeah, and this whole video could age pretty poorly in a week. It could be like, oh, we signed a safety and there's your third safety. Like, so we'll see. The Chargers are clearly not done. So we'll see.
Yeah, defensively, you know, safety is definitely the spot. You know, we had obviously Brett talked about this on our show on Tuesday. There's a chance that Derwin James plays a lot in the slot this year. And it's a role that this regime or this kind of scheme has used Kyle Hamilton in. And I do think that makes a lot of sense for Derwin. I am of the belief that I would like to see Derwin like play less of a variety of roles this year, but I think he is a fantastic option in the slot. They don't really have anybody proven there So if he does play in the slot more, and even if he doesn't play in the slot more, you do need a third safety to carve out a role, and honestly, even a fourth safety.
Yeah.
So I would say safety is the number one spot I am looking for a potential undrafted free agent to make the roster, because there's nobody behind Derwin James and Alohi Gilman that I trust. Like, JT Woods has barely played. AJ Finley was mostly special teams last year. So that to me is like number one option for an undrafted free agent. Even if they sign one veteran safety out there, there's still that fourth safety spot that one of these guys could carve out a role in, because this regime did not draft JT Woods. He has barely played, and Raheem Lane. AJ right. Finley is mostly a special teams guy. So maybe Ryan Ficken loves AJ Finley. I don't know, but even if they sign a veteran safety, there's still a really good chance for me to look at one of these undrafted free agent defensive backs and say, okay, I can see them making the roster.
Yeah, I would agree. There was already discussion, like you mentioned, of a spot just as the third guy, but there could potentially be a fourth one here too. Like, this is the most open one. I get why they didn't go out and like draft one. It's not like it was a great safety class. The first three rounds, you know, they got the guys that like, hey, we're all really happy with. You're not taking like Newbin over McConkey at that point, or whoever over Junior Colson. But yeah, they're going to need a guy. They'll probably sign a guy, you know, as Kareem points out, like as soon as we end the stream. Were you about to bring that up?
Yep.
As soon as we end the stream, they're going to sign a safety, I'm sure. I'm sure they'll sign Justin Simmons the moment we end this stream. So
that happened with DJ Chark. So
yeah, Simmons would be a bit more fun, I'll tell you that. But so let's get into it. A player that you're very high on, Akeem Dent from Florida State. Talk about him.
Yeah, so Akeem Dent, I think for me right now, is the free agent, undrafted free agent that I'm most high on. His athletic profile is outstanding. You know, his 40 time, his vertical jump is just like, dude is explosive. And I think that shows up on tape. Unfortunately for him, the reason why he's undrafted is just like there was not a ton of production for him. I mean, he was targeted 6 times this past year as the free safety at Florida State. So I saw that stat and it just blew my mind. Like, I watched him on tape and there was like a couple passes thrown his way, and I was like, man, this guy's just like never getting any opportunities to make plays on the football. And then I saw that and I was like, okay, yeah, like that's why he didn't make any plays on the football. So not a ton of production there in terms of his pass coverage, but I think his ability as a tackler and his ability to be an athlete just kind of creates a profile that they don't really have right now. And this is a guy who's played outside corner in college. He's played in the slot. He's played in the box. He's played free safety. So there's just a lot of like range, speed, versatility here. You just kind of have to like see what he looks like in a role that gets him around the football more often, because that didn't really happen at Florida State. But in terms of the movement skills, those are top notch. I think you're just kind of betting on the athletic profile for me.
Yeah, I'm not too bummed about the production part. It would help his case more, obviously. He did have a pass breakup on one of those 6 targets. So, you know, hey, one pass breakup every 6 targets is a great rate to have. Yeah. But it definitely was not targeted a ton. But honestly, you have the speed on there. And like we'll talk about Jalen Phillips. Dent's far more athletic. At minimum, he's at least faster. Like the 40 time is a 4.45, I believe. Like, he is the faster guy. So you can get, you know, if the instincts are there, if the coaching is there, the range will be there because he's fast enough. So I'm not too worried about that. Either way, like, he has a certain, at minimum, deep safety. I'm going to fly down the field and make a tackle. I can fly sideline to sideline. Yeah. I think he can at least do that for you. And that will do enough, maybe not necessarily over AJ Finley, but like Finley, I kind of liked him closer to line of scrimmage. I liked him in man-to-man coverage, that sort of thing. I didn't watch anything he did this past season, but I'm just thinking of the previous year when we profiled him. Now, I think Dent is a bit more of a deep safety. I think his role fits well there. He's got the speed for it. I think that he's what we hoped JT Woods could be. I'm not saying that he's a perfect player, but I genuinely do like his chances to make the roster because of his RAS in particular.
Yeah, and we don't know what JT Woods really looks like, but like we watched his tape of him and his missed tackles and things like that. And I think Akeem Dent is just much more of a physical presence out there who can also be the fast, rangy player that they hope JT Woods could be. So I think JT probably has a higher understanding of like ball skills and leverage, and like he's a more natural free safety because that's what he did at Baylor, and Akeem Dent is still kind of learning how to do that. But yeah, why he has a chance to make the Chargers initial 53-man roster, they don't really have a third safety, fourth safety that they trust. The high RAS is definitely relevant. I think you see it on the tape, even if there's not a lot of ball protection, you see that guy, number one, just kind of flying around making plays. There were a couple plays against LSU that I loved where you could really see his range and his burst, and he was able to chase down the LSU running back on one. He was able to chase down Malik Nabers one time. So the range and athleticism is there. The Chargers obviously value the Florida State defensive back factory that school has become, as Kevin points out in the chat. And then, you know, I put on here, and I said this already, but just the element of physicality at that safety three spot is missing, because I think AJ Finley is more of like your coverage safety. He's not like super imposing. JT Woods is like your, you know, interception rangy guy. He's not really much of a tackler. Akeem Dent brings that physicality that I think this regime wants out of a safety group. And I think that would kind of lend itself towards him having a good chance on the roster.
Yeah. Speaking of physicality, but not quite the same 40 time, is Willis Patrick, the right guard from TCU, not Patrick Willis. I've never said that, even in my brain. It's always Willis Patrick. I know I'm going to mess that up at least once.
The person, somebody DM'd me after they signed him, and they put that it was Patrick Willis. And I was like, no way, that's real. And it was not. But yeah, it was funny.
Right. Especially with the Navarro Bowman edition. It's like, oh, okay, wait, yeah. Maybe they're going to, no, whole different thing. Willis Patrick, the guard from TCU, will not mistake his RAS for, I don't know, Zion Johnson's, for example. He's worked his way from D2 all the way to one full year at TCU as the right guard. And statistically, very solid. 99.1 PBE is great. He's very much so a physical people mover, really high-level grip strength and anchor. You close your eyes, you picture strong gap guard Greg Roman would love, the Ravens would love. Jim, like, he'd be a starter at Michigan. That's kind of just the kind of guy he is, although we'll talk – well, we maybe not talk about a starter from Michigan this past season, but he fits. Like, he just looks and acts the part. Some of the concerns, like he only had the 1 year of true starting experience at TCU, having worked his way up, which is great. Like, he worked his way up, got to TCU, signed with the Chargers, an undrafted free agent. Great. But he's also capped by, I think, his role. I don't think he's a tackle. I don't think he has that, like, that flexibility that Jamari Sawyer will have. That's not going to be him. I don't think he's a center. We'll see. I'm not going to put it past him. But I just think he's a right guard only, or just a guard only. We don't know a ton about him. He did play tackle at Jackson State the previous year. That doesn't mean that I think he's actually going to be capable of playing tackle multiple spots at the next level.
Yeah, it's a fun evaluation, but it's a tough evaluation too, because the Big 12 runs a ton of the bullshit 3-3-5 scheme that I just cannot stand watching. And there's not a ton of true like work for him where he's like, two eye head up and I'm just blocking this guy one-on-one in the run game. That being said, like, the violence that he plays with, the ability to knock people off balance is outstanding. I think it is, you know, the head up stuff I'm not concerned about, but he didn't really do it a whole lot at TCU. So I think his profile stands out well in terms of the specific scheme for that they could be looking for. And you mentioned the ability to work up to TCU and play really, really well. You know, I think that does point out to some kind of work ethic, some kind of physical character that he might bring to the table. And so he's not afraid to take on a bigger challenge. He's not afraid to make that leap to a higher competition. I mean, you're talking about an HBCU to a Big 12 powerhouse. Like, that's a big change for him. And so, you know, obviously the athletic profile is why he didn't get drafted, but 99.1 pass blocking efficiency rating at college at guard. That's a really high level trait for him. Zero sacks allowed. So I just think he fits what they could look for in a dart throw at the offensive line. Like, I certainly don't think that he, you know, some people when they signed him were like, oh, like, this is a guy who could challenge Jamari and Trey Pipkins. I don't see that. I see this being like a Foster Sherrell type, where he maybe spends a couple of years on the practice squad. Maybe he makes the roster, but he's a guy that will stick around because he does have some attributes that I think this regime would really like to keep around at guard.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so let's just talk about it. Let's rip the bandaid off. we don't have Carson Barnhart on here, the Michigan guy, and yeah. don't expect us to talk about him.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, some impressions are first impressions, and that sticks with you. Now, he was playing tackle, but we're all thinking of the same game. It was the Penn State game, and that was rough. And the more I watched of him, the more I was not super thrilled. Now, maybe I should rewatch him with the lens of he's an undrafted free agent. So what potential is there? Maybe I should watch him again. But to me and to you, we've both felt like Willis Patrick was better. And with there maybe not even another spot, but if there's only one spot available, we think it goes to Willis Patrick.
Yeah, I think with Barnhart, there's athletic concerns like there is with Willis Patrick. And then there's also like there's just not a lot of power there. And I think his he had a rough tape against Chop Robinson, but Chop did that to a lot of people. I feel like his ability as a run blocker was better at tackle. You know, he doesn't just have the kind of the natural, you know, torque and power to move people in the run game as a guard. You know, when you're the tackle in this kind of run game, you can do a lot of work like on the backside cutoffs. You can do a lot of work on reach blocks. And I think that fits him better. But he's definitely not a tackle in the NFL. Like he probably has to play guard just because of the range concerns. It was a tough watch. Like we both liked Trent Jones over Carson Barnhart, and Trent Jones played like three games and was their swing tackle. So, you know, I hope it goes well, but I think Willis Patrick had significantly better tape. I think he's a much better scheme fit in terms of what they want at guard specifically. But I'm not like opposed to keeping Barnhart around on the practice squad or something like that. Mm-hmm. I just think Willis Patrick, like he's in terms of potentially making the roster, Willis is definitely the choice that I would choose from the undrafted free agent crowd.
Yeah, I agree.
Next one here is Thomas Harper, a guy who I think should 100% have been drafted. He was announced as a safety, but he played like the vast majority of his snaps in college at Notre Dame and Oklahoma State in the slot. So this to me is a slot corner. The athletic traits there are fantastic. He's a 4.4 speed guy, over 42 inches in the vertical jump. He's an explosive athlete. He's just a little on the leaner side because he is 5'10". He's not like a short guy, but he is on the leaner side. My favorite thing about him was that despite his lean frame, he was very productive as a blitzer. He had 8 pressures, 2 sacks, and 1 quarterback hit in 2023. I think he just plays with that kind of mentality. I know it didn't like work out for the Chargers, but Harper did remind me of Broncos Chris Harris, somebody that just kind of plays with his hair on fire, ball skills, blitz ability, just sticky man coverage, I think is how I would describe Thomas Harper. So I liked him quite a bit. You can see some of the stats on here. I put on here the yards per snap as Andrew Phillips as kind of a joke because we didn't like Andrew Phillips and anybody else, but they were like right neck and neck in terms of yards per snap allowed. So I had to include that one.
Yeah, Thomas Harper. The tape's awesome. I'm shocked he didn't get drafted. I don't know if there's more behind it. You know, we didn't do like a ton of homework like going into the draft about Thomas Harper, but of course, I'm about to sneeze right now. Hold on, Tyler. Don't do it. I want to talk about Thomas Harper here. Okay. His film is outstanding, and I think his ability to carry receivers down the field with his overall speed and agility and all that stuff is fantastic. Like, I don't have any, you know, remembrance of, like, Chris Harris Jr. as the big, you know, the awesome star slot corner that he was for the Broncos, but, like, hey, I'll take it. I'll take anything related and similar to that. I definitely think the relationship with Chris O'Leary is important here. I think that's potentially why he could even make it over some of the safeties we have talked about and will talk about. His film was a ton of fun, and I genuinely believe he's got a good shot to make it. If they view him as a safety, if they genuinely believe that he's a safety, though, like, do you think he has a better shot than Dent or Phillips? Or when you're thinking of him making the roster, you do think it's as a slot corner?
I do, but I think his athletic profile could translate well enough to safety if they wanted him to do that. Not free safety. I think this is a guy who would be like a matchup with tight end safety and play kind of like the middle of the field safety in terms of like the intermediate area, not deep. So it's just, I think he's a slot corner. I don't understand why they would view him as a safety. Like, the slot corner tape was really, really good. I think if you watch his tape specifically against Emeka Egbuka, like, there's a lot of high level battles there going on. And then also against USC, he had some great work against Taj Washington, who got drafted. So to me, he's a slot corner. And I'm not going to lie, if I had watched him and Tarheeb Still before the draft, I would have had Harper graded higher. I would have, but I really liked Harper's tape. I didn't get the chance to watch it before the draft, but sticky man coverage, like I mentioned, just always seemed to be in the right position. Not afraid to tackle. So I think there's just a lot to like here for a slot corner. The concerns, he did have two surgeries in the last 2 years, a shoulder injury and a hand injury. That could be part of why he fell. And then he only had 11 career pass breakups on over 1,600 snaps in college. So not a ton of disruptive ball production, but I think he has the ability to improve that in the NFL.
Yeah, I would agree. So why did he make the roster? No mainstay in the slot. Yes, sure, there's Jaw Taylor. Yes, sure, they drafted Tarheeb Still. It's still, I think, up in the air. Obviously, Jaw Taylor is someone who is not brought in by the previous or by the current regime. I still think it goes to Tarheeb Still, but you can't have enough defensive backs. If he's slot only, fine. If he can play safety, great. Issei is consistently in the right position to limit his assignment. Great. Explosive athlete, 4.49, 42 inch for 10.06 broad. This is definitely someone that is very athletic. I think you go with the upside here. Kind of like Dent, like, he's more athletic upside here. At minimum, at worst, great on special teams because of his athletic profile. So all for him here. Really liked Harper. We'll talk about him a bit later. Next up, Luke Benson, the fullback, tight end, blocker, whatever, from Georgia Tech. Will not confuse him for somebody who is a pass-catching tight end. 9 receptions, 84 yards this past season with 222 blocking snaps. But he's very athletic. 902 RAS. He runs his 4.5 40 at almost 6.3, or excuse me, almost 6.4, 241. Variety of blocking roles for him. Was not the primary guy, which is, was kind of strange. Like, they'd bring in number two quite a bit. I don't know if he's any good. I have no idea. I just watched 81. But number two was on the field quite a bit. Number 80 was on the field quite a bit. They used them paired together a lot. 81, that's Luke Benson, was not used as much as those two combined. So that was kind of strange to see. And then for the past 3 seasons, like, he's had 175 receiving yards, like, total in 3 seasons. So he hasn't been very productive. But to me, this is as a blocking role, as that fullback role. His RAS is listed at fullback. They brought him in as a tight end. I don't know what it'll officially end up being, but if he's more of a fullback's kind of guy, I feel like he has a better shot to make the roster because he might only be competing with Ben Mason. Now, maybe Hayden Hurst does some of that too, which also makes things complicated, but instead of having to, you know, we'll talk about Zach Hines, instead of having to be just like tight end 4 or 5, he can carve out a very unique role where there's fewer guys to compete with. So between that, his high RAS, his blocking profile, and his athletic profile, which he can help on special teams, I think he's got a good shot at making the roster.
Yeah, and I think, as Damage points out, you know, Ben Mason, former Wolverine, former Raven, but he only played one regular season snap in the NFL. Like, this is not a guy who's just like a super experienced fullback. We don't know how he'll adapt to Ryan Ficken's special team scheme, and we know that Ryan Ficken has had a strong say in, like, that specific role. Benson, to me, is a more versatile player than Ben Mason, and I think, you know, we can potentially see, you know, legitimate competition there. So I think the athletic profile, the versatility here. So Kevin asking about Georgia Tech, right? So his early seasons at Georgia Tech probably were under the triple option, but they have pivoted away from that. They actually moved to, like, the air raid. So it's very different scheme. So he has had some kind of exposure to different schemes that might highlight his ability or not highlight his ability as, like, an air raid tight end. But I think the blocking versatility will definitely play a factor more so for him than Zach Hines, who we do have in here later. But Ben Mason, I think, is kind of your hybrid type, where Zach Hines is, like, your traditional tight end. So yeah. I think that could, you know, benefit Luke Benson this year.
I can take this one.
Yeah, Jalen Phillips is your guy. So go ahead.
Yeah, Jalen Phillips, I like him so much that I watched 5 games. So that'll at least tell you how much I like Jalen Phillips. Now, one of them was against, was it Duke? There was one, no, NC State. He played like 10 snaps in that game. So technically 4.2 games I watched, but I loved them. Okay. I truly believe that he was able to do, at least in college, work it as three separate roles. You want him to blitz? Great. You want him to play the box? Great. You want to play him as a deep safety? Fine. You want him to cover someone? Great. This is a guy who was a leader on defense. It showed on the field with the communication, and he was voted in 2022 as a permanent team captain. So the past 2 years, he's been voted by his teammates as a permanent team captain. The question marks for him, like, I think he, like, I'm watching it, I'm going, wow, look at this pass deflection. Look at this blitz. Look at this tackle. All this great stuff. But maybe he's only got everything, but like he's good at it, fine, but not like one specific thing. And I think maybe the Chargers are looking for, let's say they feel like Akeem Dent is a better deep safety. He's got the range. You know, they like him there. He's adjusting there. They like what they saw from Florida State. If they're looking for that specific role, that's not going to be Phillips. And so it's difficult to find maybe what he will do at the next level, but he could do a lot. He also does not have the high-end speed that Dent does. Dent has that, you know, the 4.45. Phillips runs a 4.6 240, which wasn't a huge problem in college. You know, there's a play right here. He's covering Keon Coleman, and there's plenty of tackles. But will it be a problem in the NFL? Probably. Like, he does not have the exact same range. So that's definitely a concern. But I love watching his film. He's my favorite undrafted free agent, just in terms of watching him. Had a blast. And I hope he makes the roster, but we'll see when it comes to him versus Dent.
Yeah, the Chargers have had some good luck with undrafted free agents with last name Phillips, too, so they can continue that legacy. But in terms of college players, Jalen Phillips is definitely more impactful than Akeem Dent. You mentioned the athletic concerns here. That really is the big thing. It's like, how does that translate to the next level? But he was, like, always around the football. And, again, a lot of, like, comparisons, my brain always go to, like, former Utah players, former Chargers players. Phillips did kind of remind me of Alohi, like just kind of always had a knack to be around the football, be in the right position. And as an aside here, like, I think Alohi Gilman is going to be fantastic in the Jesse Minter defense. I think he's such a good fit for what Minter wants to do out of that second safety spot. So I'm excited to see what that looks like. So Phillips, I think, does have that kind of profile. So it's different than Dent. It's a different role than Dent, who is probably your center fielder type. Phillips is probably, you know, if Phillips makes it, him and AJ Finley are kind of similar players, where it's like you want a box safety, you want like cover tight ends, cover the flats, you want them around the football. And then it's a special teams question too. And, you know, I think that's where his character profile does benefit him, as somebody who's been a leader at Clemson, somebody who's willing to do all the dirty work. I think that would lend itself towards, you know, playing a bigger role on special teams than somebody like Akeem Dent, who's never really done it, and JT Woods, who's never really done it. And so that could be a leg up for Phillips as well.
Yeah, some of the special team stuff, like obviously the speed's not there, but I loved just trying to pay attention to down and distance, how often on 3rd and 10, like you look at the stats and he gave up 4 catches for 40 yards. Like, okay, that's kind of a bummer. But then you watch the catches and it's like, it's 3rd and 10, he's hitting you 8 or 9 yards,
yeah,
before, you know, right at the sticks, yeah. Like before the sticks, like it's very intentional to bring up 4th down over and over again. So I just think that kind of mentality on special teams could work. But again, Dent, like the floor is definitely higher. Why he makes the roster, basically the same thing as Dent. They need a 3rd or 4th safety. I think potentially he could fill more roles for Jesse Minter, but who knows? And then at least statistically, he's the better tackler of the two safeties. I think he's twice as less bad. Now he's twice as good as Dent in terms of the missed tackle rate. So
yeah,
he could fill more roles. I could see Dent being the favorite there. Totally would get it. We'll talk about the rankings in a bit. But yeah, liked him. Safety spot is definitely up for grabs.
Yeah. Before we get to the rest of the undrafted free agent class, I have to tell you guys about our other friends over at Unified Healing. It's a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by the Energy Enhancement System, or the EE system. We are super excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Guilty as Charged podcast and every episode of the Guilty as Charged podcast. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you are here in Fresno, Orange County, Los Angeles, wherever you're at, be sure to check out the Unified Healing website to find the nearest location towards your center of location. So again, that is unifiedhealing.com. /guilty to learn more. UnifiedHealing.com/guilty. Big shout out to Unified Healing as this year's sponsor.
Yeah, love them. Love the message. Love the whole idea about mental health. Taking care of yourself. Got to do it. Take care of it. You know, you're getting in a relationship, or you're in a relationship, or you're trying to do different things, or find your life. Like, get it all taken care of first. You know, clean out that closet. Get yourself taken care of. Whatever you got to do. And then venture out into the world. Get it all out, guys. You got a whole summer. You know, the draft is over. Cleanse it. Get it all out. Because Charger season is around the corner. And you might die. Because if we know how to go. So you know what? Take care of yourself first. And then go be a Chargers fan.
Nice. Yeah, that's what we're endorsing. It's the positive embrace of the season that's gonna just tear you apart and bring you anxiety. So
yeah,
love it. All right, back to the nitty-gritty here. Michael Mason, I had a lot of fun watching him. Coastal Carolina defensive lineman, very productive player, somebody that was disruptive against his biggest competition. I thought against UCLA in particular, had a fantastic output there. A little surprised at his low RAS score of 2.97, but, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes the film and the RAS don't necessarily match up. Two positives for him. He's got a very quick first step, and I think his hand usage is really effective for somebody who has played at smaller schools. So he does have the arm over. He does have the push and pull as well. And that run game tape for him is fantastic. You see the production on here as well. 34 stops last season for Coastal Carolina. So the defensive line room, I think, does need this kind of body. Kind of a backup type for like a Morgan Fox. So maybe that is a role specifically that he could carve out for himself. But I think his frame, his ability to use his hands as a 4-eye, as a 5 technique, I think you see that all over the tape, and particularly, like I said, against UCLA.
Yeah, the UCLA tape was a ton of fun. He hit the quarterback a couple times, and he went down hard. Something about him hitting quarterback just went down harder for whatever reason. But yeah, the numbers here are awesome. I mean, 39 pressures, 8 sacks, great. Then to also have the 34 stops in there was really impressive. Some of that is him just flat out flying around and making those stops too. Stops are just anything within 3 yards, 3 yards or less. So, hey, love it. Loved watching him. I think the Morgan Fox, not necessarily comp, but role is pretty apt here. Like, I think even with the RAS profile, the size profile, 6'2", 276, you know, underneath 33 inches with his arms, like that is kind of Morgan Fox there. So yeah, we'll see how he does at the next level. You know, watching UCLA, like the game against UCLA, you know, like, okay, you know, it's trying to sort through some good plays and some really great flashes. And then like, okay, like some like, you know, wishy-washy plays, moved off the ball, etc. Like he does have, he's not a big guy, but the flashes are so good that I think you want to bet on that. And like, you flash your way to almost like 80 pressure sacks and stops. That's not by accident. Just got to find it more consistent. But we'll see. The defensive line room is definitely, it's not a great room, but it feels like a deep room. And obviously they just drafted someone, signed someone. So we'll see what his availability is. If he makes the roster, it's because I think Puna Ford, Justin Aboigbe, and Morgan Fox are really the only safe interior defensive linemen. Fox, I think at this point, would be safe, even though I don't think he really fits. But those three, I think, are the safest ones there. Everyone else is kind of a wait and see, so we'll see. Strong 22-23 production. Obviously, you don't get to carry your production into the NFL, but hey, like I think the production matters. And then he's a quick guy, he can rush, and I think that he's somebody who's going to show up against third and fourth stringers that are fighting for jobs. I think that the quickness he plays with will really show up in the preseason.
Yeah, I think you know, Scott Matlock, I think that's the main competition for Michael Mason, right? And Scott, I think it was a little disappointing, his production in the preseason, I would say. Was not super impactful that way. So, you know, they have Morgan Fox, who's the pass rusher. If they feel like they need a backup for him, it's really Matlock or Mason. You know, those are the only two guys that I would say are prone to having a pass rush role. And Matlock is not exactly on strong footing right now. So Michael Mason, I think, does have a decent chance of making it. Yeah, I thought the tape was really fun for a defensive lineman. I watched Savion Jackson first and then Michael Mason second. And Michael Mason was, I think, far more productive and more disruptive than Savion Jackson was.
Yeah, he definitely was. And I think, nope, we have Savion Jackson coming up. Next up is Zach Hines, who is seems to be a Chargers fan favorite. I'd get it. He's definitely more productive than Benson. He had 26 receptions, 372 yards, and 7 touchdowns last season. Definitely control the C-gap at South Dakota State. We've heard of that control the C-gap thing that the Chargers keep mentioning over and over again. So that could definitely work here. He has excellent hands as well. That bears out statistically, and it shows on a film. The 3.8 yards after the catch per reception is miserable. And I usually don't try to be that blunt, but that's pretty miserable. And there's 3 straight years where he's under 4 yards in yards after the catch per attempt. What's the comparison? Like, where's my reference point? Brevin Spanford is like 7 foot, 400 pounds as an enormous tight end from Minnesota. His was 5.2. Okay, like Brevin Spanford was basically just a blocker. And even his yards of the catch per reception was 1.4 yards higher on average. So 3.8 is not great. I forget what Benson's was, but it's higher than that. And then his 22nd percentile RAS running that, like it's just kind of ugly. Look at the RAS. And next to his 40, it just says 5. Not even like 4.98 or anything. It's just like 5. it's just like, it's not even like 5.1. There's something about just being a 5 there. It's so annoying. He's definitely not the athlete that Benson is. So he's more productive, has great hands. I could totally see why he would make the roster. And we can talk about that, I guess, right here. They need to develop somebody, anybody, who can be a receiving threat and also block. And they're going to not have some of these tight ends next year. I mean, we're going to have Hurst will not be on. We'll see. But currently, Hurst is not going to be on the team. Ben Mason is not going to be on the team next year. Donald Parham, Stone Smart, all these guys are projected to be free agents next year. So I think you've got to try to develop someone who can be a bit of a dual threat for you. And then Harbaugh may prioritize like a more trench adjacent player, like inline blocker type. Over wide receiver, so that's possibly here. Again, I think we both like Benson more, but I understand why he'd make the roster because he's more of the tight end of the two.
Yeah, definitely more of a traditional Y tight end for the Chargers. I think you mentioned the 40 time. He was 0.05 seconds faster than Joe Alt, for what it's worth. So. Just kind of different levels of athleticism there. But I think his blocking tape is really outstanding. I do truly like you see him control that C-gap at South Dakota State. Dane Brugler wrote about him in the Beast and said that his leadership and his ability to just be a mainstay on that South Dakota State offense was one of the main reasons why they were able to win at the level that they did. South Dakota State won 2 championships while he was there and kind of overpowered North Dakota State, which is a big deal if you pay attention to that level of football. So there's a lot to like in terms of his leadership ability, but it's hard. Like the receiving stuff, if he's not just like open because of the scheme,
that's
not
the thing.
He's not really giving you much. So it like, this picture is cool. Like he's doing it's a great find. But there's just not a lot of like athletic traits here. So I think he's going to have an uphill battle to make the roster because you're looking at the tight end spot and it's like him versus Donald Parham. It's like, okay, well, Donald Parham is an athletic freak and is like a body type that they need and offers a skill set that this room needs as a yards after catch threat, as a vertical threat. Okay, maybe Donald Parham doesn't block well enough, so he doesn't make the roster. So the next one is Stone Smart. Well, Stone Smart definitely offers a skill set that nobody else in this room has, as somebody who can flex out to the slot and be a legitimate receiving weapon. And that's just not Zach Hines. So is this somebody who can make the roster? Maybe, but I think he would have to like truly dominate, you know, the preseason in training camp as a blocker to carve out that role. Otherwise, I just think it's going to be kind of tough for him.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the production and the way he was used. It felt like with the 2 or 3 games that I watched, it was like, all right, you're inline tight end, and you're just going to go that way down the hash, and we're going to throw it to you. If you're wide open, you're going to catch it because he's got great hands and he's huge, and he did like that happened routinely.
Yeah. Or like Ball leaks thrown, of
yes, like the 2 things you can do that, and you look, hey. Maybe there's more here than we see, right? Maybe there's more here. Tucker Kraft got to show a lot more. I'll say that much. So it's not like South Dakota State doesn't let their tight ends do this. But yes, you caught me. you try to find pictures that are a bit more flattering. This was a very nice one, but he's definitely not running a ton of, like, I don't know, what is this, a slant or a post or something and catching it. Not like he is catching a ball that seems to be high, maybe a bit behind him. That's him. Like, he caught everything. It's not like the quarterback play was awesome there, but I'm glad you talked about the production, because some of it is genuinely just like, run that way, catch the football. Yeah. And he did. That's how you asked to do that. And he got 374 yards, 7 touchdowns doing that. But I was looking for like anything more, and it just wasn't quite there.
Yeah. Now watching Tucker Kraft in this offense versus Zach Hines, it's extremely different. Tucker Kraft was so much fun. Would be awesome to have him on the Chargers right now, but I digress.
We're in 2028 and we'll talk about the tight ends we didn't
do. Yeah. okay, Savion Jackson here next up from North Carolina State. Very low RES as a defensive end. It is a little bit better as a defensive tackle if you make that change. At North Carolina State, they're another team that runs a 3-3-5 kind of defense, and so he plays like defensive end for them, but it was really kind of like a 4-eye, 3-tech role for the most part from what I watched. The 2023 stats, again, it is a 3-3-5 defense. It's a lot of double teams, so that is context for sure. But he only had 18 pressures, 3 sacks as a pass rusher, but he did have 21 stops, and I do think he is a better, more refined run defender at this point in time. I did not know this, but apparently the number 9 at North Carolina State is like revered, and Mario Williams, Bradley Chubb had number 9, and basically it's this role where like they don't hand it out every year. It's not something that, like, you know, is treated like the number 18 at LSU, for example, or number 7 or whatever. But you have, if somebody earns it, if somebody's like leadership, production, all that stuff, hard worker, they kind of give it to a defensive lineman of choice. And it happened to be Savion Jackson this year. He also had to like get the blessing of Mario and Bradley Chubb before he got the number. Like, he had to call them and say, hey, like, my name's Savion. Like, I want number 9. Like, can we meet? All this stuff. I think it's pretty cool. It like, cause you don't hear about that kind of stuff very often. Kind of speaks to who he is, as a person, as a leader. So maybe there is something more to like there than just somebody who's not super athletic and doesn't have a ton of production as a pass rusher, but he'll do the dirty work. Obviously was a leader at North Carolina State, strong hands. I think that kind of plays into who he is as a player.
Yeah. Fun watch for sure. I did not know that about number 9. I didn't even know how you found that, so I'm glad you did some research. And
Alex Katzen, maybe.
Of course. So I shouldn't have just assumed that was the case. Should have asked for number 17 for NC State. I don't know. Some people wear that sometimes, but it's a Philip Rivers thing for anyone who cares to. Anyway, had a lot of fun watching him. A lot of these guys have the limited athletic profile, except for the DBs, but that's fine. Like, I didn't see it, watch him and think like, wow, he's so terrible. Like, the RES at a certain point isn't as like 0.4, which is, you know, less than, what is this? It's a 4th percent percentile RES. It's not great, but I didn't really tell the difference between like him at 4th percentile to someone at like 22nd percentile. I don't think it made like a huge difference. But unlike someone like Mason, like, he doesn't have Mason has the production that Jackson does not.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a bummer there. And if you thought he was going to be an edge rusher, cool. Sounds like they're going to work out Bud Dupree potentially. So that kind of throws a monkey wrench in all of this. But if anyone's going to make it, could be him. They also have a training camp invite, Jordan Dominick, the edge rusher from Colorado. I like him, like, more than some of the other guys on this list. So he was fun to watch, and he's got some decent production too. So keep an eye on him, I guess. But I don't know. I'm not going to talk about training camp invite until he's like actually signed as a UDFA.
Yeah, I like Jackson more as like an interior defensive lineman than an edge rusher. I know he's like listed as an outside linebacker, but yeah, I think to me, this is he's a defensive end, defensive tackle type. Why he has a chance to make the roster, was brought in by the current regime, unlike Chris Rumpf, Ty Shelby, Andrew Farmer. Again, position up to debate potentially, but smart player, smart leader. I think, you know, that kind of profile is valuable at some point when you get to kind of debating what kind of players you want to keep and who you don't want to keep. And then I do think you can kick him inside. You can play him outside from time to time, but, you know, the team might see him as an outside linebacker. But I think he is very comfortable working as a 5-tech, as a 4-eye, as a 3-tech. He can play the wide 9 a bit. So there's a lot to like in terms of his positional versatility, whereas Michael Mason is like strictly three tech, four tech. Like there's not a lot of positional mobility there, but Savion Jackson can move around somewhat as a defensive lineman.
Yeah. All right. Last one's Amari Walton, the corner from Ole Miss. The only player I have not watched, so I got to defer to Steven on this one.
Yeah. So Amari Walton from Ole Miss, I think there's a very clear profile that he brings to the table that could make some sense for them because he is a taller, longer cornerback that outside of Christian Fulton and Cam Hart, you don't really have, and Dean Leonard, excuse me, his former teammate, you don't really have. So that's the kind of profile you're getting. The 6.53 RAS score is a little concerning, but you look at the production here, 31 tackles. He does have a higher missed tackle rate for my liking, but his reception percentage allowed was pretty low. He had two interceptions, three pass breakups last year, which for an undrafted free agent corner is pretty good. Immediately when I watched him, I got a feel for how he played the boundary, and he's very comfortable in that kind of specific role, whether it's cover three, whether it's man-to-man. He knows how to use the sideline to his advantage. He knows how to time pass breakups against the arms of the wide receivers. Generally speaking, as long as he maintains outside leverage, his tape was pretty good. It's all the other stuff that did not go super well for him. Obviously, Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas cooked a lot of people, but the LSU tape was pretty rough. Change of direction, not a strong suit. Inside leverage, not a strong suit. So you kind of have to specialize him if you're taking him. If this were the old Chargers regime, I would totally – or not old – two previous regimes under Gus Bradley, and this was our cover three scheme, I would totally get it. This is a cover three corner all day for me. Just stylistically, I think that's the kind of player you're looking at. But I think he's worth mentioning just because corner, it seems like they're just kind of going to let everybody play and then like sort out who's good and who's not. And so I think he's the true outside corner of the undrafted free agent group, and so I think he's worth mentioning because of that.
Yeah, and undrafted free agents, not perfect when undrafted for one or several reasons,
right?
So it's not going to be perfect, but there could be something to work on here. I did not know why they took Dean Leonard initially, and then he's actually has developed pretty well, I think, and we could actually see something very interesting this year, because I think year two looked really solid for him in some moments, definitely in the preseason, definitely in camp. So we'll see. So I'm now going to give people the benefit of the doubt, especially if I haven't watched them. But you say he's comfortable playing outside leverage and good there. Your concerns of change of direction and inside leverage was like, oh, okay, so okay, deep pass and outside to the boundary, got it. Literally anything else is a concern.
Yes,
but you know what? Undrafted free agent, it's all good.
Yeah,
As you mentioned.
Real quick, I don't know if you saw this, but Dan Henley was doing kind of like a Q&A thing on Twitter, and he said that Dean Leonard is like the most underrated player on the team. So for what it's worth, like the players seem to really like Dean Leonard quite a bit.
I'm trying to think if that's not true, because that sounds about right. I'd buy it. I mean, because especially if you were there in camp, and I think we were there the day he had, or at least I was there the day he had like five pass breakups, and then we were at the scrimmage where he had two pass breakups against Mike Williams.
Yeah,
it's like a down the sideline, like that's Mike Williams' thing.
Yeah,
he didn't let him get a catch. It's like, okay, there's something here. So yeah, I buy that. That's cool.
He took a huge step forward last year.
Holy cow! Yeah,
like his rookie tape, like that first preseason game, it was brutal, man. It was so bad. But watching that guy play against the Lions, like that was a guy who was like actually like holding his own. And, you know, he didn't get a ton of reps against like Amon-Ra St. Brown. It was mostly against like Josh Reynolds. But like, hey, man, this guy came into an NFL game last minute, knew he was starting and played well. And then the next game he started and played really well, too. So I'm excited. Like, you know, NSN says here in the chat, like, I'm excited to see what Dean Leonard can do for his third season. I think this is a year where he could maybe take another leap and challenge somebody for a starting role.
Yeah. Alrighty. Okay. Anywho, so our top five to make the roster, we have the same top five, just in a different order. Yeah. So we agree here. I wish it were more interesting, but we agree on the five, just in different orders. So I have Jalen Phillips, the safety from Clemson, and Akeem Dent, the safety from Florida State. I think those guys should be in their own tier. Like, I think the safety that wins is the guy who has the best shot at making it. Then I have Willis Patrick, the right guard from TCU, who I might have had higher earlier, but if they're actually going to do the Trey Pipkins at guard thing, that technically takes the guard spot like off the table, because then it could be Jamar. Like, if Trey was just a swing tackle, maybe you have more, you know, need for depth at guard. But if Trey's the guard, and I guess your swing tackle, maybe if something happens, I don't know. So I have Jalen Phillips, Akeem Dent, then Willis Patrick at three, then Thomas Harper from Notre Dame at four, and Luke Benson, the fullback from Georgia Tech at five.
Yeah, so I have Akeem Dent first, Thomas Harper second, Jalen Phillips third, Luke Benson fourth, Willis Patrick fifth. I really debated about putting Luke Benson higher, but I just feel like one of these rookie undrafted free agents defensive backs is going to make it. Like, I think they just have an upper hand on AJ Finley. I think they have an upper hand on guys who the previous regime brought in, and there's a real need there. And again, even if they sign like a safety three, I still feel like one of these safeties makes it. I just think that this regime picked these guys. I really like the fit of any of them. If they go sign like a Quandre Diggs and they need like another, you know, box safety, tight end safety, that's great for Jalen Phillips. So the order could change of that first three, but I just felt like betting on one of those guys making the roster right now. And then Luke Benson, to me, like, all he has to do is beat out a guy who's has one regular season snap to his name. Like, I think that's pretty likely, and I think it's a role that they're going to have. So
yeah,
that was kind of my thought process. And then for five, it was just kind of like pick who I liked the most. And yeah. Michael Mason, I debated about putting him on here, but I don't know really how valuable that role is going to be as kind of like a backup interior pass rusher, because they just have kind of a lot of run stuffing defensive linemen that they need. So that was my biggest debate, was Willis Patrick versus Michael Mason at five. And I ended up going with Willis just because I think I liked his tape more. And I think his potential role is worth keeping around. Like we talked about, this is a regime that has kept 11 guys on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Consider offensive linemen as weapons. So that's ultimately why I chose Willis instead of Michael Mason.
Yeah, Mason probably was my sixth here.
Yeah.
There's definitely a cutoff of where I think guys like actually have a shot to make it. But yeah, Benson from here, great. Like, I think, again, Ben Mason is there. Sure, it's a Harbaugh guy, Ortiz guy. Like, the connections are there. That's why he's on the roster. I just don't think that prevents you from going with someone like Benson, who has a ton of upside, obviously would be a rookie, hanging on to him. Cheap contract, tons of development. Go with that. Like, 4.52 is 4.52. That's no joke. You could use that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not my favorite undrafted free agent class ever.
It's not Thor's either.
No. If you read Thor Nystrom's stuff, he does undrafted free agent rankings every single year. The Chargers at 31st out of 32. So, yeah. Some good players in here that I think, the ones that we kind of focused in on today, I think are the players worth mentioning. But, you know, unfortunately for the rest of the guys, I think it's just going to be kind of an uphill battle.
Yeah. The DBs I like quite a bit. Like, I genuinely believe those guys, like, okay, they could have drafted some of these guys. I would have totally gotten it. But, yeah, the rest of the group after the top six or seven. I don't know. And the receivers, like, the East Carolina receiver, Jalen Johnson, I liked his film quite a bit. There's just no spot. Like, the odds of him beating out three draft picks and potentially two signings, that's a tough one.
Yeah. Yeah. But, we wanted to make sure we had the time to cover some of these guys. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that one. Yeah, man, we're pretty close to the dog days of summer already, which is kind of terrifying, but a lot of summer projects that we'll get to. Tyler and I are both going to do summer scouting of college prospects. So I'm going to kind of cleanse myself of college tape. And I went and revisited some back half of the season Thule tape this week. And it was nice to watch NFL tape, even bad NFL tape. So I'll do some, you know, revisiting Charger stuff, revisiting some of the free agents they signed. But I do want to do some summer scouting as well. So it should be fun. So different way for us to talk about stuff in the summer as well, for sure.
Yeah. And then hate ourselves when we get to actual draft season and there's like the Leonard Taylors and McKinley Jacksons who are supposed to be first round picks that end up being like awful and undrafted free agents. Yeah. So hopefully it's not for nothing. We'll try to watch some of the, you know, perceived locks. But yeah, I just want to know a bit more of the summer for sure. Summer should be fun. Prepare for random stuff. Prepare for great segments that get no views and dumb segments that get some views. Like, it is what it is. It's the summer, but we'll find a way to cover it in any way we can. It should be fun.
Yep. Yep. We got rookie minicamp is this weekend. Mm-hmm. Veteran, I guess total team minicamp is right around the corner. And then we'll take a few weeks off in between that and training camp. So you guys are in for a treat. And I think this training camp tour, man, I cannot wait. It's new facility, new regime, you know, get 2023 taste out of all of our mouths and let's move on to this new era. Get to training camp. Should be a ton of fun to cover this year.
Yeah.
And can't wait to see all of you guys there.
Yeah. That'll be a blast. No idea what the seating situation is, but should be fun. And I want one of those hats. They bring everybody to the facility when it's under construction with like a construction hat. Like,
yeah.
I want that hat. It won't fit my brain, but you know, all good.
Yeah, the guy who was they tweeted out the video of the grass and the guy had the hard hat with the Chargers logos on it, like it was a helmet. Love it.
Yeah.
That was super cool.
Yeah. Give me one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, you guys. That's gonna do it for us today. Appreciate you guys for tuning in. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, review, all that good stuff does continue to help grow the show. And we'll see you next week. This has been another episode of the Guilty as Charged podcast. As always, Bolt up.
I'm adding one more thing. The Raiders are going to be practicing in Costa Mesa. That's the closest a Raiders fan has been to a college in a very long time. All right. See you guys. Bye-bye.